You're listening to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com today.
Hello and welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solly. I'm the senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolly. Joining us over Skype today is our Bears correspondent and NFC North correspondent for USA Today, Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
Doing all right. Kind of a dreary day, kind of a dreary week for me in fantasy. I was all over Kirk Cousins, but did not follow that up with Brandon Cooks. I was not on the Jeremy Langford train. It was just not a fantastic week for me. How about you?
Pretty good, actually. I was on the Jeremy Langford train, so obviously reaped the benefits of that, and went into Monday night with down 2 points, but having DeAndre Hopkins, and my opponent had A.J. Green, so that worked out well. Hopkins with one of the best catches of the season, and yeah, it was a pretty good week. I'm sitting pretty in at least three of my four leagues, so I'm feeling pretty good about that.
And ooh, that Hopkins catch was something. Best catch of the year, maybe?
It was up there. That was certainly spectacular. I don't want to slight the Bears' own Zach Miller, who had his own pretty outstanding catch last Monday night. So, yeah, you can't really go wrong with either of those choices. You could throw Jeremy Langford in the mix, too, for his sellout on the diver last Monday night as well.
That's future Hall of Famer Jeremy Langford. Let's get that right after two games for him.
Don't make that mistake again.
Well, we're actually going to start the podcast with what's going on with Daily Fantasy Sports in New York. First, Arthur, I got to ask, did you watch Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, or the did you catch him on YouTube, or the parody commercial that he did?
I'm embarrassed to say I haven't yet. I caught a clip of it on the radio, but I do want to check out the video for sure. What I heard was very funny.
Oh, it was outstanding. You know, John Oliver does a fantastic job with the long-form stuff, but the parody commercial with Seth Rogen and Catherine Hahn and Adam Pally and Mike Birbiglia. Birbiglia maybe was the funniest for me when he said he turned $40 into $2 million into $35 into $0 on FanDuel. That was pretty good. But we'll start with the news here. New York's Attorney General has filed some court papers seeking an injunction to stop the daily fantasy sports operators, DraftKings and FanDuel specifically, from conducting what he calls illegal gambling in the state. They're going to go back to court on November 25th. But Arthur, both of these sites claim that they have hundreds of thousands of users. Both FanDuel and DraftKings do within New York State. If those fall, if this restraining order gets held up, or if DraftKings or FanDuel gets shut down, I imagine we're going to see a lot smaller prize pools on both of these sites, aren't we?
Yeah, you'd have to think so. And I know that the resources behind both of these companies are massive, but you had to wonder, you know, even before all this stuff kind of came to light, how they were able to build such a, you know, impressive pots, if you will, in winning. So you'd have to think there would be a direct correlation here, certainly. And this is a big-time test, of course, for both of these companies. Like you said, hundreds of thousands, those are not a small percentage of the overall users for both companies. So fascinated to see what happens here. And frankly, I'm still a little conflicted. I feel like I can kind of see both sides of this argument. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of see it too. This whole game of skill, game of chance, I've talked about this before when we had Joe Ostrowski on the podcast, that it's kind of a false choice. Of course it's gambling. Of course there's both involved. But I think Illinois probably set the roadmap correct when they have the bill introduced, as hasn't obviously passed yet, but to keep it legal but regulate it. That seems to be a win for everybody involved. The New York Attorney General, I don't know, maybe grabbing headlines, but maybe he actually does see this as illegal gambling, despite, you know, the lotto being all right in that state. He also had some very interesting, I saw a couple of things on Twitter about his court arguments, basically saying that there's more luck involved than skill, but only the top X percent win. So is it that those top X percent are just consistently lucky? Or is it that, you know, he's just full of it? I think he's kind of full of it, but we'll see what happens. Really something to keep an eye on. And this is really a huge, huge case, because there are so many people, you know, possibly affected. If you lose a state like, you know, Oklahoma or Kansas, that's not that big a deal. You lose New York, that's hundreds of thousands of people. This could really be a huge blow to those companies.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know we'll be watching closely, and this may be completely unrelated, but I'm thinking back to when Plaxico Burress shot himself in the foot, and the New York, I don't remember if it was the governor, the attorney general, whoever it was, decided to kind of make an example of him. And again, these are pretty separate things, gun laws, gambling, whatever, but it dawns on me that New York tends to be a trailblazer sometimes on these kind of hot button issues. So you have to kind of wonder if, like you said, they're trying to make some headlines and kind of trying to you know, make a point here with these big companies that have come out of nowhere.
Maybe we'll keep an eye on it as this progresses. We want to start with a couple things that happened last week. We were the victims of terrible timing last week. We tape these podcasts Tuesdays, usually around 1:30 in the afternoon. No more than about, I don't know, an hour after we got done. Andrew Luck's out several weeks, and James Starks is now the guy in Green Bay. So we'll start with Green Bay, Arthur, and Fat Eddie got benched, and he was inactive this past week. James Starks is the guy, but with how Green Bay's offense has performed, how bad do we want James Starks at this point?
Yeah, well, full disclosure, I was the guy who wasn't ready to give up on Lacy either, and to be totally honest, I'm still not ready, and it kind of ties to what I'm getting at here. I think the Packers, I think the league MVP, I think Mike McCarthy, I think they deserve the benefit of the doubt here. We've at least seen flashes from the offense over the past couple weeks. I know the late rallies have come up a little bit short, but I just think there's too much talent. I just think they still have the best quarterback on the planet. So I'm kind of holding off. Now, that being said, certainly James Starks didn't exactly run with his first opportunity as the starter, had a really quiet game, was able to kind of salvage what was a not very good game with some of that garbage time receiving yardage. But there's some pretty favorable matchups still upcoming for this club. They've got some NFC North, doormats, if you will, and the Bears, and I'm sorry to say it, but they're still ranked 26 against the run. Detroit's ranked 28th. The Dallas Cowboys aren't playing a whole lot of defense, so there's still some pretty tasty matchups here, and I just have to think that the Packers, given everything they've done in the past, will find a way to get this solved.
Arthur, you are our NFC North expert. How much of this is on Tom Clements, who took over play calling from Mike McCarthy?
It's a good question. I think there's certainly a degree of that, but I think that what Clements has done is very similar to what McCarthy did for years. I think more than anything, this is on the absence of Jordy Nelson and the inability to replace him with a complete receiver who can separate from man coverage and win downfield. The Packers don't have anyone like that right now. And I think it's really hurting them. And I think it's, as Mike McCarthy mentioned this week, I think it's causing Aaron Rodgers to stress a little bit, to kind of force the issue. His mechanics have fallen off. His offensive line hasn't played well. So I think it's kind of a collective failure. But I haven't seen a whole lot of differences in the play calling between what McCarthy was doing and what Clements has done.
Okay, yeah, because Rodgers is not, you know, coming out after the games and spelling out relax for everybody.
No.
This seems a little different to me. I'm a little off the Packers until I see that they're back on track.
And I can't fault you for that at all. We'll just have to wait and see. Like I said, I guess I kind of, you know, find hope in the fact that they do have some matchups they should be able to exploit. And then all that being said, obviously, that's what last week was against Detroit, and they weren't able to do so.
All right, Andrew Luck is out another week or five, depending on who you believe, for kidney and abdominal injuries. I'm downgrading all Colts. Hasselbeck's not terrible, but without Luck in the lineup, I think you got to downgrade all your Colts in your lineup.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I would just mention, I do fully agree, and I think it could be closer to that 5-6 week projection. I mean, this is the same injury Keenan Allen went on IR for, and the quarterback's going to take just as much abuse. So the only thing, obviously, is you have to mention Matt Hasselbeck, 2-0 as a starter, and found a way to move the offense and avoid turnovers. I think that's the key here. Andrew Luck was second in the NFL with 12 picks. That was 12 less chances those skill position players had to find the end zone. If Hasselbeck can just find a way to protect the football, you have to look at the talent still, you know, around with guys like Hilton and Moncrief and Gore. It's not like you're going to drop them all together. You just have to kind of temper those expectations.
All right, moving on. Tony Romo, Dallas Cowboys quarterback, reportedly back this week. Dez Bryant, I'm looking at him. He's got 2 receptions, 5 receptions, 5 receptions playing under Matt Castle. How much of Dez's performance is him shaking off the rust versus, well, he's got Matt Castle throwing him the ball?
Yeah, you know, I think it's certainly a little bit of both. And Dez actually was kind of rare. He took the blame for some pretty big time mistakes in that loss in Tampa Bay Sunday. He didn't fight for what turned out to be the decisive interception late. Had a drop on third down. So, you know, he's not fully himself yet either. But we knew that was going to be a process to get him reacclimated. And obviously, the return of Tony Romo shouldn't hurt Dez's value. You have to think that as the weeks go on, as that foot continues to feel a little bit healthier, and another guy with some pretty intriguing matchups down the home stretch, Washington, Green Bay, a couple AFC East teams, you have to think Brian is going to find a way to save some of what's been a pretty disappointing season.
All right, Sam Bradford is out for a week or two. We can do better than Mark Sanchez, right?
You'd think so, but over the next 2 weeks, the Eagles have the Buccaneers, who I think are fourth and fifth in scoring defense, and then the Lions. So this Sunday, there's no Roethlisberger, there's no Drew Brees, there's no Eli Manning. Could you do worse than him as a fill-in replacement? I'm not sure that would be the worst thing, but hopefully no one's in that position where they didn't have a better backup planned.
All right, one more that I do want to get to. Julian Edelman went out. He's injured. Danny Amendola has to be the guy you're targeting, right?
Absolutely, he? Yes. And he and I think his ownership rate is still hovering somewhere around 40% until the waiver wire opens up for business, obviously, later on this evening. So Amendola, surprisingly, less owned than maybe you'd think prior to the injury. He's a must-grab. I'd have to think he's a priority waiver claim this week.
All right, before we get into our Bears-Broncos breakdown, I want to talk about a guy who just faced the Broncos, and that is Charkhandrick West, a guy who a couple weeks ago we were all hyping, all touting, hey, Jamaal Charles is out, go pick up Charkhandrick West. He was terrible in the first week, but he's gotten better. He had 161 total yards and 2 touchdowns against Denver last week. He gets the Chargers this week. We know what Jeremy Langford did to them. If he's not on your team already and you're looking for a running back, Charkhandrick West is a pretty good pickup if he's out there, isn't he?
Yeah, he has surprised me. I was kind of in the Nile Davis camp only because we had seen him do it before, and I didn't know who this guy with the strange first name was, but he certainly proved me wrong. He's got a pretty dynamic skill set, too. That was not a slouch defense that he torched last week. So things are actually looking up suddenly for the Chiefs a little bit. That defense is playing outstanding. That only stands to benefit the run game as well. And West is a guy that you could certainly go out and target. I mean, he's owned in over 80% of leagues, so you're probably not plucking him off waivers, but you may be able to find an owner who thinks they've already got the best out of him and go out there and throw your offer out in these last couple weeks before trade deadlines pass.
All right, Arthur, let's break down Bears-Broncos here. Who is Brock Osweiler, and how does he change the Denver offense?
Well, Osweiler, a former second-round pick, actually under John Fox in 2011. He is 6'8". He's a monster, one of the bigger quarterbacks you'll ever see back there in the pocket. But don't let that deceive you. He actually moves really well. He's actually a better fit for what Gary Kubiak historically has wanted to do on offense with a lot of that, the play action, the bootleg heavy attack. So an interesting guy, but, you know, he's nothing if not inexperienced. Obviously, this will be his first NFL start. Kind of hard to know what to expect unless you're, say, John Fox, Adam Gase. It's pretty good timing for the Bears to be the first team to see Osweiler in extended action, obviously knowing exactly what he's capable of from not only drafting him but watching him in practice over the past 4 years.
And with how poorly Peyton Manning was throwing the ball before he got hurt, is this actually maybe an upgrade for guys like Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, and if you happen to pick him up, Vernon Davis?
I can't believe I'm saying it, but you know, I really think it is. He came in, he led 2 touchdown drives in the fourth quarter to save a shutout for the Broncos. They actually, I think, had the longest streak in the NFL of not being shut out. And I think more than anything, it's probably the mobility. We got, you know, Manning's arm strength, his noodle arm has been on full display. But even beyond that, you've seen him hitting the deck when rushers are sometimes still a yard and a half, 2 yards away, just to save himself. I think Osweiler's got a little bit more creativity in the pocket. Like I said, I expect there to be a lot more moving pockets now because Kubiak should be able to do that, depending on how much they can put on Osweiler's plate right away. That's another element. I mean, that Denver offense has been so fluid trying to tailor it to Peyton Manning, and Osweiler's been getting a lot of first-team reps. So you kind of wonder how that acclimation process goes. But yeah, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders, I know he's banged up. Demaryius Thomas has underperformed with Manning. This should be a good thing for them, I would think.
I would think if we've got moving pockets and quick hitters, that probably favors Sanders over Demaryius this week.
You know, it just depends. I mean, I think Sanders is banged up. He's got a toe, and he was being checked for a concussion late Sunday. So it just depends. But you know, they're both pretty good on broken plays, and certainly Thomas, if it is going to be kind of trying to get the ball out of Osweiler's hands quickly, Thomas is exceptional after the catch. So it depends on how the Bears want to play it. Tracy Porter has been tremendous for Chicago, and he has been known to follow the opposing top receiver. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think you'll probably have them both in your lineup, obviously, assuming Sanders is healthy.
All right, I know we already put Jeremy Langford in the Hall of Fame, but we're probably tapping the brakes against this Denver defense. I think for the sake of this conversation, we're going to say Forte is out again. Is Jeremy Langford, I guess these are two separate questions. One, is he for real? Two, this Denver defense, are they geared to take him away?
Well, the first part first, there's no question Langford is for real. You can't, you know, discount what he's done over the past 2 weeks. And it's kind of funny because I'm pretty sure on this podcast last week, we were talking about tapping the brakes against St. Louis, another really good defense, obviously. So, you know, we saw what Langford was able to get accomplished there. Obviously, his numbers were a little bloated by that 83-yard touchdown. But yeah, I've just been so impressed with his complete skill set. And I just really think that speed is something the Bears have lacked. I really don't know that Matt Forte, you know, finds pay dirt on that exact same screen that was blocked up perfectly just because he doesn't have the, you know, obviously the wheels of Langford. So, you know, at this point, I think you're rolling with him. Like you said, Forte, I expect to miss at least one more week. You remember the Bears have a quick turnaround in week 12 for that Thanksgiving game day. So John Fox says he doesn't kind of factor in those sorts of things, but it'd be hard not to. You know, knowing that they'll only have the short rest before traveling to Green Bay. And I mean, if you have better backfield options, if you went and got Langford, spent your waiver budget, and yet you still have better options, then frankly, I'm enviable or envious of you. But I know I don't, and I think I'm going to have to plug him in again this week.
All right, so finally, who do we feel confident in starting from this game? I feel confident in the Denver wide receivers, strangely. I think Osweiler's an upgrade like we talked about. This Denver defense, look, defense travels. I know that Denver's offense has not done well, but this Denver D is scary good, and I know everyone's hyped up over what the Bears have done the past couple of weeks, but I'm officially tapping the brakes on the Bears offense and fantasy this week. How about you?
Yeah, I think so too. Alshon, obviously, you know, his streak of 100-yard games was ruined last week. He clearly wasn't himself because of the groin injury he suffered in practice last week, and it won't get any easier, obviously, against Denver's big three in the cornerback room of Tlaib and Harris and Roby. They're all Pro Bowl caliber. I don't think there's a lot of bear. Although I said, like Jeremy Langford, I'm pretty sure you could do a lot worse for, you know, a flex spot. Certainly, maybe even an RB2. And one, you know, kind of element we didn't talk about here with relation to Osweiler, we talk about the spike that the receivers should get. But what about that Broncos defense? What about all the, you know, the bad situations Manning was putting them in with those 19 interceptions? That wasn't helping the owners of the Broncos defense, who were watching points, you know, just get rung up on Denver because of those unenviable situations. So I think the Broncos defense actually gets a big lift here. And even though Cutler's been protecting the football, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to start them, certainly if you have them.
Yeah, and that's a really good point with the Broncos defense. This has been one of the longest stretches in Jay Cutler's career that he's gone without multiple interceptions in a game. You kind of feel like maybe he's due for one of those, even though he's performed really well under Adam Gase.
You're right, and just adding to that, Denver doesn't have a takeaway in three games, so yeah, they've actually fallen off a little bit, and that could be a kind of a perfect storm, or obviously if you're a Bears fan or a Bears fantasy owner, an imperfect storm, if you will.
Yeah, you're going to hear this phrase once when we talk about top plays, but regression is coming, that's how I'm feeling about this. All right, let's get you ready for this week with our top plays. We're going to give you a top guy, a mid-range guy, and a sleeper, a quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. We'll start at quarterback. Arthur, who's your top guy, your mid-range guy, and your sleeper for this week?
Yep, top pick has to be Tom Brady, of course. Threw for 466 yards and 3 touchdowns the first time he saw the Bills this season. We talked about the loss of Julian Edelman, which is concerning, but the Patriots are as good as anyone at kind of conjuring up the next man up, and I certainly think Amendola and LaFell will get bigger roles. So a big game should be certainly on the horizon for Brady. Mid-tier guy, I think Matt Ryan has a good chance of bouncing back. The Falcons use the bye, hopefully to get him either healthy if he's nursing some kind of mystery injury, or just on the same page with his weapons and get that whole offense back on track as they get ready to host the Colts. And for a sleeper, I like Marcus Mariota. That Jaguars defense played over its head last week, but who thinks that'll continue? Not me, really. And Mariota's been pretty up and down, and he was pretty pedestrian last week.
All right, I'm with you on Mariota with the sleeper. I went a little off the board for top guy and mid-range guy. I'm going way down narrative street for my top quarterback, and it's Cam
Carson,
Newton. No, it's right. Cam Newton. I like the Palmer pick. I don't mind that at all, but I like the Cam Newton thing, and here's why. It's totally ridiculous. Did you see the letters to the editor section of the Charlotte Observer?
I heard about it.
If you haven't heard, there was a mother who was at the Titans Panthers game this past week. She was sitting near the end zone when Cam scored and did his dab and dance, and she was very, very upset about it and wrote one of the most passive aggressive letters to the editor that I have ever seen. Basically saying, what about the children? Cam's a role model. I think Cam just goes out and has fun in Washington. They did all right against New Orleans. They buried him by halftime. But I really like Cam at home against Washington. And just I want to see him dance all day long on that. So I'm going with Cam. Really just more rooting for that than anything else. Mid-range guy, also a little bit off the wall. I know that their offense has looked really bad, but Russell Wilson gets the 49ers at home, and on DraftKings he's only 5,900. I know that they did poor. They didn't do poor. They put up 32 points in the Cardinals, and now they got the Niners at home. And I feel like everyone is really down on Wilson this year. I think he could probably come back with a decent game against a really bad defense at home.
I mentioned last week, I think he could be a late season surge guy, and certainly the Niners haven't done a whole lot consistently this season.
All right, running back, your top guy, your mid-range guy, and your sleeper for this week.
Top guy, I'm going with AP, getting ready to welcome the Packers and coming off his sixth 200-yard game of his career, which ties O.J. Simpson for an NFL record. He is a monster right now. He is running away with the rushing title and threatening. He's more than threatening. He's getting ready to become the first 30-year-old ever to win it. So I like that matchup a lot. I think he's in for a big day. Mid-range guy, I like Lamar Miller. I really think he has been as consistent as anyone on the Dolphins this year. Has really picked up his play when Dan Campbell took over, and just don't really think much of the Cowboys defense at all. And for a sleeper, I actually went with Ronnie Hillman. It was kind of just a dart throw. I think that the Bears certainly held down Todd Gurley pretty well last week, but as I mentioned earlier, still 26th against the run. And when I watch Hillman and Anderson, I go back and forth, but I continue to like Hillman's big playability, and we'll see what a change in the backfield at quarterback can do for him.
I like it. My sleeper, not really a sleeper, we talked about already, but Charcandrick West, after putting up 161 total yards and a couple touchdowns on DraftKings, his price went down, which everyone sort of went, huh? Because he gets the Chargers now, and he's only 4,500. Right. That's basically a free square at this point.
It's got to be a mistake.
Yeah, the algorithm just wasn't working on that one, I don't think. Adrian Peterson, top guy, yeah, especially with the way Green Bay has looked. And mid-range guy, Latavius Murray, former podcast guest Evan Silva, tweeted this out, said that Murray has one touchdown in his past six games. The Lions have given up 11 rushing touchdowns this year, tops in the NFL. Again, regression is coming, and I think Latavius Murray just goes nuts this week on the Lions. Wide receivers, top guy, mid-range guy, and sleeper for this week, Arthur.
Sticking with that same matchup, I think Calvin Johnson, I think something's coming here. He's going to get plenty of DJ Hayden in that really bad Raiders secondary, and I just think he needs to kind of make amends. He almost cost the Lions what was a cathartic win, obviously, at Lambeau Field last week with that failure to secure the onside kick. Hasn't done much of late, so I wonder if this is the week where Johnson finally explodes. Obviously, it's a tough week for receivers with guys like Odell and Antonio Brown down as well. A mid-range guy who we did talk about a little bit, Danny Amendola. I know the trust is there between Brady and his other diminutive well, never mind. I'm not going to go there. But I think Danny Amendola should be solid, should be a target beast for New England in what could be a high-scoring matchup. And then for my sleeper, it might just be because I'm such a big fan of his and I haven't seen anything in a couple weeks. But it was a Michael Floyd week on Sunday night versus Seattle. John Brown was active but didn't play before the bye, so we haven't seen anything from him in a couple weeks. Now he'll get that Cincinnati secondary, which is good, but I don't know if it has the speed to match Smokey Brown, and I wonder if this is finally, now that people are off him a little bit, if this is the week he gets going a little bit.
I like it. My top guy is actually in that same game. It's Larry Fitzgerald. That's the narrative street you should be going down this week with the Bengals-Cardinals game. I like Fitz a lot this week. My mid-range guy is Amendola. I'm with you. We talked about it. He's just a target monster, especially with Edelman out. I don't really have a sleeper. I don't like a lot of the low-priced guys this week on DraftKings, and I'm not seeing a guy that can really step out and do anything. So I'm probably paying up at wide receiver on DraftKings, and I'm not searching the waiver wire for a whole lot of wide receivers outside of Amendola this week.
It's funny that you say that because I racked my brain coming up with Smokey Brown. I looked at the Devin Funcheses and the Chris Givens and whoever else that was just, you know, a bunch of blah there.
Yeah, I don't feel good about it at all. Tight end, top guy, mid-range guy, sleeper, Gronk number one?
Yeah, we know Gronk is number one. We know Olsen is number two. So I went down a little bit just because I think Jordan Reed is such a stud. I know he gets a really, really good defense, obviously, in Chico's Panthers. But, you know, Reed, when he's on the field, has proven to be one of the top three or four, maybe five best fantasy tight ends in the game. And obviously that Washington offense coming off just a huge, huge win. So I love Jordan Reed this week. I like Jason Witten this week now that he gets his partner in crime back. The Dolphins defense showed a little bit of life, but I don't think that they're impenetrable versus tight ends, so I really like him. And then I went super deep sleeper here. You're not probably really going to play him, but just for fun to get him into the podcast, Justin Perillo, the Packers tight end.
National hero, Justin Perillo.
yeah, found the end zone last week, had almost 60 receiving yards. He's a former undrafted guy, doesn't have the pedigree of their starter, Richard Rodgers, and yet the Packers are kind of they're doing whatever tinkering they can to get this offense going. We saw Jared Aberderis a little bit last week, too. So you have to wonder if they may try and build on the little bit of success they found with Perillo against the Vikings.
Yeah, the national hero Perillo thing is a reference to a tweet from a former Shaw Media employee who now covers the Packers named Ryan Wood, who, as soon as Perillo caught that ball that set up Green Bay to possibly tie the Lions, that was the reaction in him. I thought it was pretty funny. Gronk number one for my guys at the mid-range. I like Travis Kelce. Chargers have the number 30 DVOA defense against tight ends. And Kansas City, like we've talked about, looking a little bit better on offense. Sleeper, it's a guy going up against Oakland, so Eric Ebron. I know.
That's, thought about that, too.
I've targeted tight ends against Oakland all year, and I've done pretty well doing so. So that's what we've got this week. Don't forget to get all of the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts and listen to our podcast each week as we get prepared to win the rest of the season. Our podcast is available on iTunes, so if you've not done so already, please head over and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, who says Black Friday should only be one day of great deals. Chevy's Black Friday sale is on right now. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what Dan Hampton drives. Big thanks to our guests on today's show, Arthur Arkish. Our producer today was Dan Mott. Our associate producer was Nick DeMaio. I'm John Solly. For all of us at ChicagoFootball.com, we hope you have a great week of fantasy football.